And good morning to everyone listening out there on this wonderful network. This is Dr. Z here with the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z Show. You can always get more information about natural medicine in a lot of our walks and talks and fun shops, because we don't like to work when we talk about natural medicine. It's all fun at naturalnurse.com and drznaturally.com. So we're really excited that you took some time out of your schedule to join us and learn about natural medicine. And we have a special guest, Dr. Sandy Milgram. Hope I'm saying that right. And he's a clinical associate professor of dermatology at Rutgers and head of pediatric dermatology. He went to Western Australia Medical School and graduated in 77. And we're going to be talking about natural interventions for skin health, including oil of oregano that's available as a water-based applicant. And maybe, who knows, maybe some other great tips, dermatological tips from Dr. Milgram. And he also did an interesting study where they looked at oregano extract for wound healing. It was a double-blind, randomized, petroleum-controlled study. Maybe you can explain what that was. And the oregano was very powerful for Staph aureus, which is, I know, a big problem. And we'll find out more about not only maybe oregano, but possibly other essential oils. Welcome, Doctor. How you doing?
Good morning, Dr. Z. How you doing?
Great. I'm so excited that we're seeing natural products being used in, medical and possibly hospital settings and things like that. I had a friend who was the head of dermatological surgery at SUNY Stony Brook University, Dr. Dan Siegel, and he was, when he joined us on one of our herb walks, myself and the natural nurse, he became so enamored, he started to really study herbs, and he began to look at another fascinating plant, which is Godu Kola, Centella Asiatica, to help heal post-surgical wounds and prevent keloids and things like that, and became a real fan of natural medicine. So it's great to see kind of more mainstream folks get into this field. So thank you very much for your work.
It's interesting. The American Academy of Dermatology, which is the National Academy of all dermatologists, 2 years ago they set up an integrative society, and this coming October we're having our second meeting, and this is under the umbrella of all the traditional dermatologists with traditional medicine. So obviously there's much more interest in this, and there should be.
Yeah. So how did you get interested? And how did you go to school in Australia? That's kind of interesting. I was expecting to say, hey, crikey, on the phone there.
Too right, mate. Now, when I was in high school, my father had a job there. Our whole family was there the finishing up high school. And then I went to the University of Western Australia Medical School. I did a year of residency there. And then I came back and finished up doing dermatology at the University of Michigan. So along the way, I sort of fought having the Australian accent. And so I still sound like I'm from Brooklyn or Queens.
Yeah, I could catch a little inflections of Australian in these occasional words here and there. That's kind of interesting. Great.
And the problem is that when I teach at the medical at Rutgers Medical School, I sometimes I don't know. I've forgotten. Do I pronounce it the English way or do I pronounce it the American way? So that's what that they
like oregano, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So, thanks for coming on. And so let's talk a little bit about, we could talk about oregano. We want to, focus on that. But, I find it interesting. I teach phytopharmacognosy at the University of Bridgeport. So I do a lot of work in educating the folks about essential oils. And we find that essential oils are almost like the powerful drugs of the plant world. They're in small amounts in the plants. And when we really concentrate them, we get incredible potent medicines that have been used since antiquity. Tell us a little bit about your understanding about different oils and their role.
Well,
in the
oregano oil is an interesting product, an interesting natural product. It was first recognized by Hippocrates 2,400 years ago that it was very effective as a healing ointment. In fact, he started using it on cuts and skin infections and dermatitis. Hippocrates is famous for saying, "Let food be your medicine, and medicine be your food." And in his writings, it definitely helped. The problem is with oregano oil is because it has the essential oil in it. There's the downside that some people can get contact dermatitis from it. And allergic contact dermatitis, to the listeners, is like a poison ivy type of reaction. Not exactly. Poison ivy has a whole different chemical there. But the oregano has a compound in there called terpene, and which is a strong sensitizer, which means it makes you break out. So doctors stopped using it, although they knew that it did kill bacteria. In fact, oregano, for centuries, was called nature's antibiotic. But again, it fell out of favor because of the reactions that you develop on the skin.
And how does that work? Like, is it sort of like where you get like one exposure and it's not so bad, and then maybe another exposure, and your T cells start to get like a whiff of the oil, and then all of a sudden they make some antibodies, and then you can blow up and have? Because that actually happened to a patient of mine. He was using straight oregano oil, unbeknownst to me. You know, he didn't tell me these things.
And right.
The poor guy couldn't even wear shoes to his wedding. He had his foot blew up like he looked like the Elephant Man, and he had to wear moccasins at his wedding, which was kind of funny, but sad in a way.
No, but that's exactly the way it works. You have to first get exposed, and then it's called a type 4 reaction, hypersensitivity reaction, which we have T cells in our skin and these other cells called Langerhans cells, and what they do is they first recognize it, and then it takes 1, 2, 3, it depends on how the individual, how many exposures, and then the body just rejects it. And recently I saw about a 45-year-old gardener, and he works planting flower beds for people, and he can't do it anymore, and he's been doing it for years. It took 20 years for him to get sensitized to poison ivy, and now he can't get anywhere close to it, and that's also poison sumac has the same thing. But the oregano oil has the essential oil in it that can also cause the same problem. So it's very hard to recommend it to patients because of the sensitizing potential. But we also see this, believe it or not, with a lot of healing ointments. For example, the triple antibiotic ointments that they sell over the counter, there's antibiotics in there and I know we're not going natural here, but just to give you an example.
Yeah, like Neosporin, all those things.
Has neomycin, which actually, incidentally, was invented at Rutgers University in 1949. And there's a great topical antibiotic that came from a natural source. But the problem is that about 5 to 10% of people break out from it. They break out from bacitracin, even break out from lanolin that's in Aquaphor and things like that, so which is a major, major problem now, because somebody goes in to see the doctor, they have a surgery, the doctor gives them a little neomycin ointment or triple antibiotic ointment to use, and then the patient automatically thinks that they're infected. So then they go to Instacare, and the guy there doesn't recognize it. They get put on an antibiotic and does nothing, and they continue the topical ointment, and it can go on forever. So that was the original problem with the oregano essential oil.
Yeah. So it's a powerful inflammatory reaction that's basically happening, you're saying, and it's not really a infectious process at that point.
Exactly. So what happened was there was at Rutgers there's a PhD scientist, Daphne Frankel, who's a plant biologist, and she's a world-renowned expert on natural products. And what she did was she was involved with a company that was taking taking the essential oil out of the oregano leaves. And when they do that, they do it through a process called distillation, which is, you know, they run steam through it. They remove the essential oil. And by the way, for your listeners, when they say essential, it doesn't mean that it's essential. It just means that it's the essence of the plant's fragrance or flavor.
Yeah, I think they use volatile.
Volatile. Some
right?
people say volatile, and that's where you get the fragrance and what have you.
Yeah.
So they used to take the leaves afterwards and just throw them out. And being attuned to our age where we want things that are sustainable and renewable, she actually looked what was in the leaves. And believe it or not, there's a compound, and there's about maybe 15 different compounds, but the major one is something called rosmarinic acid, and it's a very, very powerful antioxidant. It's anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial, and she came to us at Rutgers, and she said, well, maybe we could do a study on this for wound healing. And as you mentioned in the beginning, we did a study where we took 20 patients who we used a placebo on, and then 20 patients using this water-soluble extract. And it was incredible. I mean, we saw not only was there half as much staph colonization or growth on these post-surgical wounds. Actually, for the listeners, that means that we would cut out like an abnormal-looking mole or a basal cell cancer and put in stitches. And then afterwards, we would either tell the patients to use a bland ointment, let's say petrolatum it was, and or Vaseline. And the other group had the same thing, but we put the water-soluble extract of the oregano plant from these leaves in the ointment. And it was a double-blind study, so nobody knew who was getting what. And at the end of this, it was incredible. There was half as much staph colonization, which means growth, on the surgical sites. There was one-third the amount of infections. But the most amazing thing is the wounds heal better. They were less red. They were less elevated. They were less hypertrophic. There was no pigmentation. And we published that in the dermatology journal, which they normally don't go for the integrative type of things, and that's been very well received. And as a follow-up now, I mentioned earlier about this integrative society in the American Academy of Dermatology. We're presenting another feature of this particular water-soluble extract this October. Because what we did was we tested it against various pathogens or bacteria that cause infections and problems. And, you know, it not only does it kill staph, but it also kills MRSA, which is the bad staph that they're all bad, but this is the one that's causing a lot of problems from being selected out where it doesn't respond to certain antibiotics. It kills strep. It killed, when I say kill, you know, we're talking something called MIC. So at a very low dose, it inhibits the growth of these bacteria. It also treats the yeast it suppresses the yeast that causes dandruff. It suppresses the bacteria that's associated with acne. And the strep that causes impetigo, I mentioned before. And it also kills, believe it or not, C. difficile. So, you know, some people are talking about using it in the hospital as a hand cream after surgeries because, you know, after you wash your hands. Because you know what happens in the hospital. People wash their hands. They get dermatitis. They get more bacteria growing on the dermatitis. And then they start using those hand gels, which doesn't kill C. difficile and makes more dermatitis. So if you just wash your hands and you use this particular ointment, you're going to kill you're not going to carry staph on your hands, or less likely, unless C. difficile to go one patient to the other ones. So there's a lot of exciting things going on with this water-soluble extract.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This is so timely. I'm actually flying out to California tomorrow to do a presentation in front of a large group of alternative physicians associated with the ARM group, Restorative Medicine Group, and one of my topics is to talk about rosmarinic acid and its application in autoimmunity, because we've actually seen that it's very helpful for that. So that's great. And you're basically getting rid of the carver crawl and time wall and the other
exactly.
potent oils, and what's left is are these powerful polyphenolic compounds.
Exactly. You know, I got to tell you, Dr. Z, I'm very impressed because it's very hard to get this story over to traditional physicians. They don't get it. But that's exactly enough. And the phenolic compounds that are in there, they have another thing, which we actually did a little open test. It works for lightening the skin as well. So, like, let's say a woman has melasma, which is the mask of pregnancy, or age spots, they call them liver spots and things like that. It also lightens those up as well because it works like hydroquinone. But again, it does not cause contact dermatitis. I must have given it out to 400 or 500 patients. I don't have one contact dermatitis.
Right. Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Milgram, and he is involved with interesting research on a water-soluble extract of oregano where they've extracted the rosmarinic acid and other polyphenolics and have seen it be very helpful for wound healing and killing bacteria, even MRSA. That's very impressive, without lots of side effects. And we're really excited to hear this type of research that's going on at Rutgers. I think it's fascinating. And what we need in medicine is to do more work on natural products and use these types of things. So I know rosmarinic acid is one of the most powerful antioxidants around. It's extremely powerful and potentially all antioxidants, you know, at the level of the cell. I always teach my students, you know, I say at the level of the cell, it's all about oxidative damage that happens. I mean, even if your T cells go in there and attack, they're still releasing it down the road. Eventually, some type of white blood cell, whether it's a macrophage or neutrophil or whatever, is blasting the area with our own body's hydrogen peroxide and other things and generating the free radical burst. I know rosmarinic acid is amazing, so I think that this even has some anti-aging problems, and who knows, maybe even can stop collagen damage. This is what I'm lecturing on.
Exactly.
The use of rosmarinic acid for collagen damage. So tell
exactly
us a little bit
what,
about
it. And we took Dr. Frankel calls this extract from the leaves. She calls it oregano natural preservative. So we had it tested. There's a test that they do from the NIH called ORAC, O-R-A-C, which is this oxygen radical absorbance capacity. So it's a standardized test to test for antioxidant potential of any product. And this extract, which, as I said, was primarily rosmarinic acid, scored extremely high in that ORAC value. And just as an aside as well, the oregano natural preservative is now licensed and sold as a food preservative. So can you imagine that rather than putting some chemical into the foods, you put this natural oregano extract in there to suppress growth? In fact, going back to the original when we started talking about oregano oil, I can mention that the chicken company, I'll do it anyway, Purdue Chickens, they actually feed oregano oil with the volatile oil in there to their chickens. They call it an antioxidant. I don't know, they don't want to call it antibacterial, but what it's doing is it's suppressing the growth of some pretty big organisms which are in the chickens, and if the chicken's not cooked properly, it's going to spread to other people. So that's another feature of oregano.
And so, you know, you do a lot of work in pediatrics. So what type of skin things would kids come in with that this potentially could be helpful? I'm thinking probably eczema, atopic dermatitis, is a a big thing that we would see.
Yeah, in fact, it's funny you almost have ESP because I was just going to bring up that this is the perfect
good doctors.
Item.
Good doctors think alike.
Exactly, this is the perfect item for atopic dermatitis or eczema. Now, I can't make any claims because we haven't done the study yet, and we're just writing up the protocol as we speak.
Wow!
But if you look at what causes atopic dermatitis, of course, there's a very strong genetic component, but like 80 to 90% of children get staph on their skin, which perpetuates the problem. So if you decrease the amount of staph, in fact, a lot of doctors now tell people to use Clorox bleach in baths to decrease the amount of staph colonization on the skin. Some people use sea salt baths, which is what I recommend, to decrease staph, and that alone will help atopic dermatitis children to clear up. But there's a lot of evidence that we could use it for atopic dermatitis because not only will it knock down the staph, which is destroying the barrier, but the antioxidant, anti-inflammatory nature of this natural oregano water-soluble extract probably has, and I can't until we test it make strong claims, but it looks like it might have anti-inflammatory,
like hydrocortisone. I know you need to do the clinical trials, but they've done a lot of work looking at the ability of rosmarinic acid to balance what's called cyclic AMP and GMP. And for the listeners that maybe are a little lost, the cell kind of has this like yin yang balance, and we find that in dermatitis there's not enough cyclic AMP and there's a predominance of what's called cyclic GMP, and they see this in many skin diseases. And so we're looking, you know, there's been some research on certain herbs that do balance cyclic AMP, and those tend to be the one traditionally that naturopathic physicians and herbalists like myself and use for the treatment of eczema. We also, with eczema, there's been some research on looking at the bowel flora and excessive permeability of the gut. Dr. Fasano did a lot of work on that at the University of Ohio. He's a physiologist looking at zonulin and things that open up and close the zonulin. Zonulin's like a drawbridge, and when you kind of jam it open, you get a lot of antigenic material into the bloodstream. So rosmarinic acid is internally. Now, I know that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about externally, but I'm talking about it in my lecture, internal use of rosmarinic acid, that it's been shown to downregulate zonulin, which is then going to help people with gut permeability, which then oftentimes can help them with allergies and reactions to foods and other things like that. So
amazing.
There's a lot of evidence and interesting work ahead for us all. So it's fascinating. Now, what about other studies that have been done on this particular water-soluble extract? You talked about the big one that you were associated with. Is anyone else looking at this stuff?
No, actually, this was the first study that was done. And the next thing we'd like to do is to look at it for, like I said before, for the eczema or atopic dermatitis, comparing it to hydrocortisone, because as you know, there's a tremendous phobia against using cortisones on the skin, maybe, although the lower strength ones, it doesn't look like there's much absorption, but there is some. And then you're not addressing the bacteria on the skin. And then there's another study that we're just doing a protocol on, looking at it for acne, and putting it in the actual oregano water-soluble extract, a natural preservative in a water-soluble type of base, and then using it to treat acne, because it definitely has an effect on inhibiting the growth of P. acnes, which contributes to acne on the face.
Now, is there a danger that the bacteria could become resistant to this, or because I know Mother Nature does a lot of duplicity and puts lots of compounds and things, and that's why we find that, you know, sometimes we don't get resistance to some of the natural products as much as we do like a single drug agent. So is there any information on that you know of?
No, and in fact, there's the looking at oregano oil, there's no resistance at all. We also see this with things like benzoyl peroxide. There's just no resistance to that, as you see with some of the topical antibiotics that are used, like clindamycin or erythromycin. But this, so far, there's absolutely no resistance, and that makes this even a much more exciting product. Because, you know, with a lot of the new things, there's definitely resistance, and you're selecting out very dangerous organisms.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break and play our natural medicine chess, which is our little mini modular program that myself and Dr. Kamai do to educate people on natural medicine. And when we come back, we'll talk more about this really interesting water-soluble oregano as a natural preservative, and maybe talk about other applications possibly that Dr. Milgram did not mention. So stay with us, folks, right here on Progressive Radio Network. This is the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, so stay with us.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss an herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, the spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances, such as cough syrups and digestive tonics, contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnaminic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinzenolin and cinzenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'm Dr. Eugene Zamperone, and the natural nurse has the day off. And we're discussing, having a high-powered discussion here with Clinical Associate Professor of Dermatology at Rutgers and Head of Pediatric Dermatology, Dr. Milgram. And he attended University of Western Australia Medical School, and he was involved with performing a double-blind placebo-controlled study in the Department of Dermatology at Rutgers Medical School, using a water-soluble oregano extract as a wound-healing ointment. And today he's discussing the safety and efficacy of using this natural intervention, and maybe others we can talk about, as an application for many different maladies that we and troublesome afflictions that we see in the world of dermatology. And so welcome again, Doc. Nice to hear you again.
Okay, Dr. Z. Nice to hear you, too.
Yeah. So let's do a recap for those, because some people join us at the half hour, and we've been just give a recap of what we've been discussing the last half hour.
Okay, basically we talked about the oregano plant. They call it the prince of herbs. And because it's a natural antibiotic, but the problem is that the essential or volatile oils that are in there can often cause contact dermatitis. So although since the time of Hippocrates, it was known as a natural antibiotic to use on the skin, and also parenthetically it's used orally as well for other conditions. But the problem is that between about 5 to 10% of people eventually develop an allergic contact dermatitis on your skin. So about 10 years ago, this scientist, Dr. Frankel, found that the leaves that remain after the essential oil is removed contain very powerful antimicrobials, antioxidants, and anti-inflammatories that are water-soluble but don't have that effect of causing contact dermatitis. So they're not strong sensitizers. Well, that means it causes allergic contact dermatitis. And so it's called oregano natural preservative. It's sold as a food preservative, a natural food preservative. And then we did a study at Rutgers looking at it in post-surgical wounds, which means when we cut out something, we used it in an ointment base, and we compared it to a Vaseline placebo, and there was much less infection. There was better wound healing. The wounds actually appeared much better, and that was statistically significant on when the patients rated it and the doctors rated it, and there was less colonization of staph. And then we just mentioned before about that we've recently done studies, and that it works on other organisms, MRSA, C. difficile, the yeast that causes dandruff, and even P. acnes, which causes acne. And I think that that about covered it.
Mm. Yeah, very amazing stuff. Good. So why do you think this is? Tell us about, like, when you get a wound, there's different stages that the skin has to go through, and how this maybe can possibly facilitate healing, even though you maybe haven't seen the clinical evidence. What's your theory on why is it, preventing, like, keloids from forming or the wound from not healing well? I know skin goes through a whole series of events that has to happen in order for it to mend.
Yes, and it's probably multifactorial. The first thing that happens when you get your initial wound is, of course, you have to make sure that there's no bleeding there, and most of the time the doctors will apply pressure, put something there to stop the bleeding. But the next phase in wound healing is a defensive phase where the bacteria, which are naturally on our skin, some of them are commensals, or that means that we have our own natural bacteria on the skin, but right away other bad players like Staph aureus will move in there and prevent wound healing. So presumably the way that this works is that bacteria like Staph set up something that's called a biofilm. And a biofilm is a colony protector that's on the skin. What they do, what the bacteria do is they create sugars, polysaccharides, and they produce their proteins, which come from their bacteria DNA, and they produce a wall around them. So we call that the biofilm. And the reason why they do that is because they want to fight off the body's immune system. We spoke to before about macrophages and T cells and neutrophils. These are all different types of cells in our body that try to fight off an infection. And one of the ways that the body, that the bacteria fight this off is by making this almost like a wall around themselves so that their alien colony will be protected in the skin and they can multiply unimpeded so that they, that this is one of the way that they fight off the body's immune system. And presumably, what the oregano water soluble extract does is the anti-inflammatory and the antioxidants in the area break down this biofilm, and then again the antimicrobial actions of the water-soluble extract. As we mentioned, it, the one that's in the highest concentration is this rosmarinic acid, can get in there, kill the bacteria, and then the next phase can happen in wound healing, which is the proliferative phase. And the less wounds traditionally get look better if there's less of an infection, and the wounds can proliferate, and the normal epidermal cells can move in there if you don't have this biofilm and you don't have an infection. And so that's most likely why the wounds look better, less red, less thickened. And then once everything heals up, there's a maturation phase where there's a new the collagen gets molded, and it gets a little too complicated for people. But
yeah, that's okay, though. I think they're following it. You know, it's another application that's interesting is that I've seen rosmarinic acid really help facilitate circulation to an area, and so you know the delivery of you know one interesting thing also about wound healing is you got to deliver. You know, nutrients, glycosaminos, glycans, and other proteoglycan substances, which we've talked about on the air, maybe some other nutrients that are involved in remodeling the collagen, which is like the connective tissue that has to be mended. So rosmarinic acid tends to be a very powerful, we know that because another amazing source of rosmarinic acid is rosemary. That's where they got, I mean, it's probably first isolated there, I would assume. That's why they named it that. Might
right.
be wrong, but that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that seems to, you know, rosemary was always used even as a folk remedy to promote circulation, even topically in a particular area. And there's an old saying in Chinese medicine, where there's good blood flow, there's good healing because you move the qi or the energy. So, you know, if you go back to the ancient medicines, the elders knew about these types of things. So if you can promote good, the reason I'm building up to a question here about diabetics, because they have terrible blood flow, and that would be a great study to look at diabetic wounds and see how this particularly helped with that. What's your thoughts on that?
No, and the problem is that with diabetics, you're going to have the microcirculation is definitely shot,
right.
and it's also on the lower legs where they're going to get more of these gram-negative organisms. And believe it or not, the study that we're presenting in October at the American Academy of Dermatology Integrative Section is that it does also kill like Streptococcus and other gram-negative organisms that a diabetic might get in a diabetic ulcer. Again, we haven't done the studies on them, but I expect that it should work because it would increase the blood flow. You know, Dr. Z, the worst thing that you do when you put in stitches, when you're suturing up a wound, is to put it under tension. And we all see that that's when the wound will break open, it doesn't heal well, it becomes infected. And the major reason for that is because if you close up an incisional wound under tension, then you get no blood supply, as you were saying.
Whoa.
And so you're not going to get as much the blood flow won't be in there. The body's immune system can't get in there. There's going to be more bacteria, and so the whole thing becomes infected and opens up. So presumably that might be another reason, the increased blood flow in the area.
Yeah. You mentioned that bacteria stop the healing process. Is there a reason for that? I mean, is that just for their survival, or?
Yeah, well, you know, that's every organism is looking for it out for its own survival. And, you know, you turn on the light in the kitchen and there's a mouse there, and whoosh, you know, because they know that unless they disappear, but there's no question about it that it helps with survival. And that's what the oregano plant, probably over millennia, why it has the antioxidants in there, are probably to prevent oxidation of the essential oil. And so that protects the plant. So, again, you know, more people are going to cultivate it and what have you. And not only that, the antibiotics, the natural antibiotics are probably there to fend off predatory bacteria, yeast, fungi, and other things. So to make the plant more hardy and to prevent it from microbial invaders.
You mentioned the ORAC value of that. That's interesting because that stands for oxidative. I actually don't know what it stands for, but it has to do with oxidation and antioxidant. So you wonder if this oregano oil can, or the water-soluble extract could stave off oxidative damage to the skin, like maybe photo damage. I'm just thinking outside the box. That's what I do. I'm a creative thinker like that. But I'm thinking maybe, who knows, maybe we could use... I know there's a lot of research on using antioxidants for sun damage. For instance, like in Europe, the sunscreens that they have there tend to have more antioxidants than we do here in ours, and sometimes we don't even have any antioxidants. But they're toying around with using some other photoprotective substances, and one of the more interesting things that I've been looking at is a particular type of fern, Polypodium leucotoem, which they call the skin block fern, and I don't know if it has rosmarinic acid, but it's got other similar polyphenolics, and this has been shown. I could send you the paper, Doc, if you never read it.
Yeah, I know that it's sold commercially as something called HelioCare.
Yes.
And I use it to treat vitiligo in patients.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it's been shown to help vitiligo, and for the listeners, that's the white spots that people get on their skin, like Michael Jackson had it on his hand, that's why he started with the white glove, what have you. But it's sold over the counter as a very powerful antioxidant. It increases the amount of sunlight. It's actually almost like having a sunscreen in a bottle. And it's an excellent product. It was invented up by physicians at Harvard, and I use it all the time. So the fern is, I think it comes from Central and South America, and it's a very safe and effective product. I also use it for, there's certain people who are very sensitive to the sun. They have something, photosensitivity. There's a thing called polymorphous light eruption, where as soon as the spring comes, they can't walk outside because they get almost like a hive or welts on their skin. And this HelioCare definitely helps. The Polypodium leucotomus that's in there definitely increases the amount of time that they can stay in the sun till their skin becomes hardened up. It just, once they get a little bit of a tan, then the body's natural protection helps them, and then they can wean off of the HelioCare.
That's interesting because skin cancer, I'm sure you're seeing a lot of more skin cancer, because of bad burns. I remember when I was a kid working on the roofs, you know, trying to make money for college, I was a roofer, man. I got some bad burns that now I go to the dermatologist to keep an eye on certain things because I'm half Irish. So this is great that you have this particular product because now they're lopping off things here and there. And, we need something natural to put on our wounds to make sure that they heal properly.
Well, it's interesting. I just saw a 52-year-old lady who's very, very light skin, Irish background as well. And she comes in a couple times a year for skin cancers. And she usually has two or three of them removed a year. And the last time she came in, I gave her this, the natural oregano ointment. And she specifically called me up to tell how much better this one healed with less scarring and what have you. So, you know, it confirms what we found in that double-blind placebo-controlled study.
Now, is there any thing we didn't talk about as far as this product there that you wanted to discuss with people, maybe future applications? I mean, we tried to think outside the box and look at maybe some other applications for using this thing, or you said maybe as a hand wash. I mean, there's a lot of interesting.
Yeah, no, it could be used as a hand ointment because, you know, hand washing definitely removes the bacteria. The problem is the more irritation you get on the hands after you wash makes a perfect petri dish for more bacteria. So the antioxidants, inflammation of this in a hand ointment or cream will moisturize it, decrease the amount of irritation, but also prevent you from carrying these things. So that's great. It's great for bug bites. The inflammation associated with that. I've had patients use it for the inflammation associated with hemorrhoids. A lot of different things. There's a lot of work to be done, and part of the medical establishment, we want to make sure that it actually works in a double blind study, because a lot of people make claims on things, and it's really not there. That was the excitement about this when we broke the code at the end of the study, and the wounds look so much better. I mean, you can't really argue with a statistical significant results like that.
So how do you, when you're designing a study like that, how do you make sure that the placebo is not detected by the patient versus the rear thing? What do they usually do, like perfume it to make it seem or smell like the stuff? And what does this smell like?
The oregano does have a faint oregano smell to it. It's very, very faint. And we thought about putting something in there in the placebo, but we didn't want to do that because we felt once you start putting things in, then you're going to increase the chance of sensitization. So that's the downside of the study, in the sense that the doctors never saw it, the doctors never smelled it, and the patients never saw what the placebo was. But in terms of putting masking scents and all that, we didn't want to do all that. We just wanted to see as an initial study whether or not it worked, and it didn't. And regardless of what the wounds looked like, there's no question that there was, you know, one-third the infections, one-half the staph colonization. So, you know, that really doesn't matter about if there's a faint oregano smell in the
And how many people were in the study?
Twenty patients who got the placebo, and 20 got the actual oregano ointment with the active ingredient.
So how does it work usually in medicine with studies where you first start? Did you first start on like animals, or did you move right to humans, and then did they do bigger and bigger clinical trials? And so, in other words, how do you convince your colleagues that are doubting Thomas's about natural medicine that this stuff is really amazing?
Well,
you know, with 20 patients, they might put that down, you know.
Yeah, I know, and they're very reluctant. I hate to say this, but they want some drug company that's paying. You know what goes on, the circus that goes on, and the trips and the meals and the whole thing. And
Australia.
I'm preaching to the choir here, but what we'd want to do is somebody repeat the study. We're just going to continue doing these other studies with this water soluble extract and leave that up to maybe a pharmaceutical company because somebody that's got the resources to do a much, much bigger study. Mm-hmm. But I'm totally convinced because I've used it now for about a year in my own practice, and it definitely works.
So I know that they looked at the scar, like they actually, the doctors looked at the scar and probably took pictures, and then patients filled out a form, a patient assessment tool. Is that like, so there's like an objective and then a subjective part of that, and then they used it for about 90 days, which is about 3 months or so. How long does it take typically to work on a, I guess it depends on the wound and many factors, but...
Well, again, that's 100% right. There is an objective, there's a subjective thing. And again, the patients might have, understood that it looked a little bit different. There's a faint smell to it, which is actually quite pleasant. But the photographs the doctors looked at the photographs, the doctors looked at the patients, and so that's a pretty objective thing, especially in the sense that they had no idea who got the placebo and who didn't.
Yeah, that's amazing. Great. Well, I worry about people. I've had patients come in with real bad skin problems, cellulitis and whatever. I wonder if this could have any applications for potentially psoriasis, although that's a pretty complex, possibly autoimmune disease. But again, that's what I'm lecturing on. I'm lecturing on the applications of rosmarinic acid for autoimmunity. What I found internally, what was interesting, is I found that when people take rosmarinic acid internally, that it seems to be a selective T cell inhibitor. So it doesn't, it seems to inhibit the T cells which have been activated against, whatever, the joints or whatever, if you're talking arthritis, but it seems to leave what they call the naive T cells alone, which are the T cells that aren't programmed yet. You talked about when you get exposed to poison ivy or even the oregano oil, that eventually after a couple of different times the T cells get programmed to destroy, and you end up with this huge inflammatory reaction. So who knows if that's another mechanism of the rosmarinic acid? I assume you do absorb rosmarinic acid topically and it gets into the body. Have they looked at whether those polyphenols need something to drive them in through the skin, through the epidermis?
No, that I'm not aware of. But talking about psoriasis, it's quite interesting because there's a big push now with psoriasis to use these biological medications that actually blow out a person's immune system.
Mm.
And psoriasis, there's many doctors who feel that, there are systemic effects from psoriasis, perhaps increase in risk of coronary artery disease and other problems as well. But it would seem that people should be aware that many integrative dermatologists feel that diet, whether you're taking ox bile and increasing the amount of fiber in your diet and decreasing alcohol and carbonated drinks, has definitely been shown to decrease the amount, and the weight loss as well, and it's definitely been shown to decrease the amount of psoriasis people have. So if you could go in a more natural way than these things that you see advertised on TV, where at the end of the commercial for a TNF-alpha inhibitor, they start telling you might have tuberculosis and it might cause lymphoma and all these other things, I like a more natural approach. So perhaps, the rosmarinic acid could be used along with diet, taken orally, maybe even used topically, and that would seem to me a much safer way to do things. As they say, the easy way is often the hard way. And I've seen patients who have been put on one of these biologic, and I'm not putting it down, because when I was at training at the University of Michigan, there were patients with the most horrendous psoriasis flying in and getting light therapies and methotrexate, which suppresses the immune system as well. But for the average person that has, 10 or 15, 20% of their body, there seems to be there's much safer ways that psoriasis can be treated.
Yeah.
And maybe this rosmarinic acid someday will be used topically, orally, along with diet and weight loss, what have you. So the problem is they talk about informed informed consent, but the average person has no idea about a lot of these things. And if they go to the doctor, he just runs in the room, says, here, you know what, I'll use these shots, you know, every 2 weeks. And they don't understand that you know, the long-term detrimental thing. I just saw one of the local mayors in New Jersey who was put on one, and he developed lymphoma, and he died from it. Oh. You know, and I don't want to mention the medicine, but it's something that they advertised for 10, 15 years on TV. And there's no question. It's right in the package insert that it causes, you know, it might be a small percentage, but still, you know, if you're the person that gets it, it ain't good.
Yeah.
It is awful. It's awful. So,
where could our listeners get some more information? Maybe email you or get some more information on this. Maybe read the study.
Yeah, there's a whole pile of studies on the website oregano.com. It's oregankno.com. oregankno.com. And if they go on the website, there's a whole list of the references and what have you. And it's being sold commercially as a wound healing ointment. I'm not associated with them at all. But then, you know, that's and at the bottom of that page, that's where it is. And if people want to email me, they're welcome to it. To email me with any questions. And my email is Sandy, S-A-N-D-Y, at laser, L-A-S-E-R, the number 1818.com.
Great. Well, it's been so enlightening to talk about this, and so timely, too, as I'm also lecturing on rosmarinic acid and its applications to a whole group of holistic doctors out in San Diego. So, thanks for taking the time to educate us. This is exciting. I'm going to start using this, too, in our naturopathic clinic at the University of Bridgeport, where I'm one of the supervisors there. And we appreciate it.
And also, I want to thank you because, you know what, this was a great give and take, and I learned some interesting things from you today, Dr. Z.
Oh, great. Thanks a lot. And stay in touch. I'm going to send you some information on some things, and I want to talk to you more maybe about it, you know, doctor to doctor. But thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks again for having me.
Okay. Have a good day. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'm Dr. Z. We want you to stay healthy, folks, and read about natural medicine and apply it. Have a great day. Bye.